things out of our lovely heads for a few moments as we focus on the breath for 3 deep breaths. The deep in breath. Heals the heart.
It's considering.
Heals the heart. For the last several months, we've been studying chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called the Yoga of Wisdom. Studying the Yoga of Wisdom. Today we're going to begin chapter 3, which is the Yoga of Action, or Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga. Just another facet of the diamond to look deeper. So we're going to study Karma Yoga, or the Yoga of Action. And to do that, we're going to need to learn some terms which some of you have heard before and some may not have. Because in the worldview from the Indian subcontinent, they look at things a little differently, categorize things a little differently, and have words for things. You remember, perhaps some of you, the gunas. Gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. We'll be taking an introductory look at that as they show up in the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll have some tools with which to study the Yoga of Action, Karma. Karma Yoga. Here we go. Satchitananda, a path for personal spiritual transformation. His commentary in the Bhagavad Gita, our primary focus today will not be on verses so much with practical spiritual advice. We're going to deviate. Rather, we're going to learn some or review some intellectual concepts which will help us when we return to the practical. And he always has some practical spiritual advice he believes in. Karma Yoga. Karma. Did you know that karma is action? Sometimes in the West we talk about fate, kismet, karma, and we group them all together. Karma is action. What we do, things we do, action. That's karma.
So why, in today's day, they use the word karma as to be something tranquil, something passive, you know. Keep your karma down, or I'm having a karma at this moment. What is that? That's like, they do that you are in a quiet, slow pace.
Yes. Karma also in the West refers to what is to be is to be. It's like there's some larger force at hand, and the result of your life is charged some other higher power. That's your karma. So what happens may not be in line with your willfulness, but rather your karma. That's another meaning here in the West. And yet, the root of the word is just action. And many, many words evolve over years with a different meaning. One of my favorites is cemetery, which used to be sort of a lovely word, but then people associated with dead people, so They don't call cemeteries cemeteries anymore, they call them memorial resting places. Words change.
Mm-hmm.
Words change their meaning over time.
What's the root word meaning of cemetery?
Place where you bury dead people.
Or a resting place rather than a place for dead people.
Whatever. A graveyard.
That's better.
Is,
yeah.
I thought it was another meaning. Okay.
Yeah.
If you go to some place that you have no personal emotional attachment to, like we've been out in the hills of West Virginia there and stopped by local graveyards just because they're interesting.
Yeah.
So it's okay that they're graveyards for us, but perhaps if you had someone there in your family, you would think of it as a memorial resting ground. Karma just means action. Up to now, we have seen something of the philosophy about the self, or the Atman, or Christ consciousness. This is what we've been talking about. And touched on the practical side of Karma Yoga, doing things, our yoga of wisdom, which helps us to go about realizing that Christ consciousness or capital S self. We've been doing that. We also covered the qualifications of a realized person, whom the Gita calls one of steady wisdom. Good morning. Welcome. In the last couple of classes, we looked at five aspects of a person of steady wisdom. Free from desire, not attached to outcomes, and so on. The qualifications of a realized person, you could say an enlightened or a lighter person. In this chapter, the Yoga of Action, we'll learn the secret of action. Secret of action. And we'll need some terminology to do that. So here we go. Chapter 3, slokas 1 through 3. This is Arjuna talking, the prince who wants to be enlightened by the Lord Sri Krishna. Arjuna says, since you teach that the path of wisdom is better than the path of action, Krishna, why are you encouraging me to do this terrible act of war? Remember, Krishna encouraged Arjuna to do what was his to do, doing what came from his heart. Now Arjuna twists that around a bit. He's back in his head. He's giving a logical thing rather than coming from his heart. Since you teach the path of wisdom is better than the path of action, Krishna, why are you encouraging me to do this terrible act of war? Arjuna continues, I am confused by what seems to be a contradiction. Please tell me a sure way to attain the highest. These are rhetorical statements, aren't they? Some of us may feel confused about some of these spiritual principles. And we come to the scriptures to find a way to attain the highest for ourselves. So we are like Arjuna. The Blessed Lord said, all right, that's the prologue, now we get into the guts. The Blessed Lord said, Arjuna, in the beginning I gave the world a twofold path. In the beginning I gave the world a twofold path. The way of discerning wisdom, and in Sanskrit the word is jnana yoga. That was chapter 1, looking at the wisdom, the yoga of wisdom. The way of discerning wisdom, jnana yoga, and the way of selfless action, karma yoga. Now the Gita puts a little modifier on karma. Karma is not only action, it's selfless action. Ah, that's interesting, isn't it? We all know about willful action, don't we? We get in our mind, this is what I'm going to do. That's a willful action. Selfless action is another variety of action. It's an action that springs from us without effort, doing what is ours to do. It's a subtle distinction. And the Blessed Lord said, I gave the world a twofold path. I gave you a discerning wisdom, jhana yoga, and a way of selfless action, enlightened action, karma yoga. So now we set the stage for a lot of commentary. Here's Satchidananda talking. For active people, there's the path of karma, or action. We all know people who are very active in life. Busy, 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 busy. And we know people who are more contemplative in life. We all have both aspects, but in some, one dominates more than another. Here is Satchidananda saying, for active people, there's the path of karma, action, and for people who can sit and analyze, depending entirely on their intelligence, the path of wisdom, jhana, is recommended. These are not black and white things. It's a matter of emphasis, isn't it? So we've spent several months looking at the yoga of wisdom, jhana, yoga. Some will immediately think, okay, I'm intelligent, jhana yoga suits me very well. I'm smart. I have a degree. I like to read books. I know other people who never opened a book. I went to college. I know people who are tradespeople. They just do things. So we might make that distinction. I'm intelligent.
So what would be the definition for those who are intelligent and active?
Let's see. He says it's normal for some people to think this way. And even people of action may think of themselves in this light as well. I'm intelligent. I'm smarter than those college graduate people. They have book learning, but I have common sense learning. I have a person I know very well who's told me that.
Street smarts.
Hmm. Pardon?
Street smarts.
I got street smarts. I got common sense. I run a business and I know how to do this. And all those, I hired a college educated guy once and he didn't have a clue. He lost money and screwed things up. I'm intelligent. Perhaps all of us think of it like that. Even if I suggest you get involved in some work, you may wonder, this is Satchidananda. You may wonder, does this mean he thinks I'm a little dull? Not as smart as somebody else? Why can't he recommend the path of wisdom or me? And that's a normal reaction. So Lord Krishna explains. And how does he explain it? In the next sloka. Here we go. Chapter 3, we're going to look at slokas 4 and 5 here. Ceasing to do things will not make you actionless. Actionless. If you think you're an intellectual person, the Gita says, ceasing to do things will not make you actionless, nor will you rise to perfection simply by renouncing actions. He's referring to willful actions here, isn't he? A path of spiritual evolvement, we've learned, is not to be attached to the results of our actions. To act for the action's sake and not be attached to a particular result. Do what is ours to do in the moment, and then let go and let God. Rather than setting yourself up for, I hope I'm not a failure, I want to be a success, rather than letting go of the results and letting the results show up by themselves and being joyful whatever results show up, because at the time of action you acted for the action's sake. In a way, it didn't come from your willful mind, it came, it was yours to do, you just knew. And when you act in that way, after you perform the action, you can let it go. And let it go. And whatever shows up is okay. I haven't gotten to that place yet. Sometimes when I do things, I'm worried if people won't like it, or I'm worried if they will. I won't find what I know is wrong with it, so on. Well, that's our human nature. Part of our spiritual evolution is more and more to be in the moment, acting for the action's sake, and letting go of what shows up next, and being in that moment as well. And here we go. The sloka says, nor will you rise to perfection simply by renouncing actions, willful actions, expecting results. Here's a comment before we get to the next sloka. The karma, or desire to act, should fall away by itself like a fully ripened fruit dropping from the tree. Can your desire to act fall away by itself like a fully ripened fruit dropping from the tree? If an unrepentant fruit, that's us, seeing the ripe fruit dropping from the tree, also wants to drop off, attain that enlightened state, it will have to force itself. We can't force ourselves to an enlightened state, is what he's talking about here. Renouncing action should come automatically, instead of you forcing it by insisting, I renounce the results of my actions. Instead of trying to push the desire out, desire for outcomes, you can develop a natural state of desirelessness in which you don't feel the need of anything. The key pivotal word here is need. Need. As long as we see ourselves as a needy person, then we are trapped into willfulness. Needy. I need love. I need my car. I need a house. I need my body. I need friends. Needy. Rather than receiving what is ours to receive, like a fruit dropping off a tree, naturally. It's a challenge. A natural state of desireness in which you don't feel the need of anything. Yes, you accept things when they come your way. Some money comes your way, oh, thank you, God. We're in a spiritual practice between April 15th and Independence Day here at church, right? Reverend Russ has suggested, if you haven't heard yet, that if you receive some unexpected income, you had no idea was coming, as a spiritual practice to tithe 10% of that unexpected income, just that, in addition to whatever your tithing practice is, and see how that transforms you. The principle of being, when we're not attached to that found money, but rather keep it going, keep it in circulation. That's the spiritual principle. Have any of you, as I have done years and years ago, when you're in the grocery line and the person gives you change, experienced that the person gave you more than she should have given you? Some found money? Did you tuck it in your pocket and say, ooh, I got some extra money here? Well, you didn't, but I did.
I gave it back.
Yes, you gave it back. Good for you. But I remember a time when I thought, ah, that's my good luck. And I put the money in my pocket. I was thinking of myself coming from my willful me, mine, world is centered around me. I got something extra and I'm keeping it. Later on, I got a different understanding that for me, it wasn't my money. It wasn't my money. Rather, this money belongs somewhere else. The money is energy. And if I retain money that is not mine to have, that money will have a negative energy and won't be for my highest good. It won't be for my good. Rather, the more joyful and more satisfying action is to return the money with joy. Say you made a mistake. And the cashier might tell you, oh, thank you so much. You know, if I'm short money at the end of the day, they deduct it from my salary. Mm-hmm. And then you think, oh my God, I have so much money. This person is struggling to get by. What would it be like if I took some money from that person's pocket? It's a sadness. You can develop a natural state of desirelessness in which you don't feel the need of anything, not even found money. Not found money. Rather, your needs are met by the universe. God meets all your needs, so you don't have to worry about it. That's the result of all the prosperity teaching that goes on here at Unity. That you're just in a sense of a state of grace all the time, where everything you need is given to you. Are you willing to accept it? Are you willing to be open that what you have received is the perfect thing? Mm-hmm. Perfect thing. As a matter of fact, you receive so much, you need to get busy and distribute some of it back, which is even more joyful. Rev. Russ talked in the service today about what is your divine purpose in life? Divine purpose. Well, it's to be of service, isn't it? Be of service. Where can we give? Where can we make ourselves useful? And then you don't feel the need of anything. Then you've truly renounced. Not by willfulness, but by having let go. Then you've truly renounced. You can't force renunciation, but you can prepare your environment for this. And let yourself mature. Prepare your environment. Letting go of the consequences, the results of actions. So here's sloka number 5. No one is free of actions, even for a moment, because everyone is moved to do things by the qualities of nature. No one is. Is anyone here free of actions? Even your heart is beating, whether you want to or not. Your tummy is digesting that food, getting ready to push it out when it's ready. And I can see everyone still breathing. It's all action. Oh, I even see minds thinking. That's an action as well. You're the thinkers that have the thoughts. We are the thinkers that have the thoughts, thinking thoughts. No one is free of actions, even for a moment. Now, why? Because everyone is moved to do things by the qualities of nature. We're going to look at the qualities of nature now. Satchitananda has several pages on this. He's going to take us into some background ideas from the ancient Indian tradition, when people spoke and wrote in Sanskrit words. Qualities. What does qualities of nature mean for you? What are the qualities of nature? What are your personal qualities of nature? Where did they come from?
You're born with them.
Some of your qualities you're born with. Your hair color, your eyes, your stature, skin aspects, and so on. Mm-hmm. And perhaps even some mental thing, some mental tendencies, perhaps we inherit, right? Quality of nature, good.
And the quality of of being with your feelings, like emotions, unsatisfied emotions, for example, anger, fear, or sadness.
Not being with your emotions, quality of nature. Another quality of nature is how we grow up, what our environment is. It's the old argument of nature versus nurture. Our nature is, we inherited this, and then nurture. We had wonderful parents, we had abusive parents. We grew up in a time of peace and calmness, we grew up in a time of war and killings and so on. Those are all qualities of nature as we experience. And how do we experience qualities of nature? See them, we hear them, taste them, we touch them, we feel them. Qualities of nature, they have something to do with our senses, don't they? Qualities of nature.
To me that says the setup, the rules of the earth plane, what we're given to work with when we come here.
Qualities of nature, what we're given with when we come here. Mm-hmm. We know there's something else besides the qualities of nature, or rather we've learned that here. Mm-hmm. There were some philosophers several centuries back that said, they had a whole philosophy about this, everything you do is predetermined. Is that called predestination?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you think you are now going to become, it's all predetermined, it's all set up in advance. It's sort of as if you have no control or no participation in it. And they point to our nature, what we inherited, and our nurture, how we grew up. And that's why they explain you are as you are now. It has something to do with the qualities of nature, which we're going to look at in detail. But to put it in a little perspective, I want to mention another concept that we picked up from our spiritual studies, and that is we can look at our inner selves as having three aspects. The Atman, the capital S self, our divine seed, our center, our Christ consciousness. There's no name that adequately describes it, but you may sense that there's some divine aspect of yourself. You may somehow sense it, feel it, or suspect it. Or even if you wonder about it, same thing, wonder about it. That's one aspect of ourselves. Another aspect of ourselves is our discerning intellect. Our discerning intellect. That's the part of you that's watching everything that goes on. all the time, observing and witnessing. It's part of us that watches it. And one of the things that the discerning intellect watches is, or could watch, is the mind. Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand everything? How do you do that? With the discerning intellect. Generally, it requires some spiritual work to get to the point where you can observe the mind. Meditation can be a great place from which to observe the mind and notice how the mind's working. Oh, jump, went here, went there, went there. From the discerning intellect, you can notice in meditation that you have strayed from the object of your meditation. Your discerning intellect notices it. And once you've pointed that out to the mind, then the mind recognizes it has a commitment to focus on a meditative object, or to repeat a meditative thing. And the mind goes back to that meditative state, thank you to the discerning intellect. And then the mind jumps off, goes and does the things again. And then you observe again. So those are the three layers. The mind is part of the qualities of nature, and I suggest the other aspects of ourselves are spiritual essence, our Christ consciousness, and a discerning intellect are where we can have things turn out differently than the qualities of nature might push us. For example, our mental habits push us by a certain path. Through our spiritual work, we may learn that's not the path we want to go, and we can use our discerning intellect to notice when we strayed. That's not willfulness. Willfulness is up here in the mind. That's our habits, things we desire. Discerning intellect has nothing to do with that. It's just watching. Supporting the mind and doing what the mind has been committed to do, put to use. Questions? We're going to get into the qualities of nature now, but I wanted to point out there's more to life than the qualities of nature. Okay?
Are you saying, I'm just assuming when you said the Atman and the discerning mind are not part of the qualities of nature?
Sure.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Why not? Mm-hmm. It's all a little bit paradoxical.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? All right, here we go. The qualities of nature, known as the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, are the three qualities that function through prakriti, or nature. We're asked to memorize four words in Sanskrit here to support our study of Karma Yoga. Five, actually, gunas, the gunas, which are the qualities, sattva, rajas, and tamas, we'll talk a bit about them, that function through prakriti. So in Sanskrit, prakriti is nature, qualities of nature, prakriti. So everything we experience, what we touch, feel, and hear, everything our conscious mind has access to, there's a word in Sanskrit for it, it's prakriti. All the stuff. Prakriti. Great little word. Here we go. They are similar to positive, negative, and neutral forces. That's sattva, rajas, and tamas. They're similar to positive, negative, and neutral forces. We've learned that sattva is the characteristic of peacefulness or spirituality. Rajas is activity, moving, running here, doing this, doing that. Tamas is the aspect of lethargy or stillness. Right? Those are the three qualities. They're similar to positive, negative, and neutral forces. He goes on. We have the three gunas even in an atom. Protons, electrons, and neutrons. makes this fun little comparison. Mm-hmm. Which of those three is the active one? Always busy, never stopping. Electrons.
But they have a negative charge.
They get a negative charge. And the protons and the neutrons. The neutrons are sort of the negative ones. Remember, they don't do much of anything. They don't have a charge. But the protons are the ones with the positive charge, and perhaps the Sakta energy. Anyway. It's just a
Can you pause it for a second?
Mm-hmm.
The analogy between the protons, if that's the one, then wouldn't that be more of the rajas?
Electrons are the rajas. They're zipping around,
never stop,
full
okay.
of action.
Right.
The neutrons just take up space. It's like tamas. It's the protons that have the positive energy, and the positive energy of the protons, and the negative energy of the electrons is in balance. Something like that.
That I get, but I'm trying to connect to the analogy of Sattva being the poet. I'm just in my head, I guess.
Right. He's just having fun here. If you get it, fine. If you
yeah.
don't, it doesn't matter. Anyway, he says, what are the difference between all of the elements in the world? Oxygen, hydrogen, iron, titanium. The number of protons, the number of electrons, the number of neutrons.
Oh, interesting.
Hmm.
Right? Didn't you learn that in school?
Yeah, I didn't do very well.
A long time ago.
Chemistry was not my strength.
You have little models with the atoms
yeah.
and
yeah,
pictures of the neutrons and protons
yeah.
and electrons.
I mean, this is very profound because all electrons are the same, all neutrons are the same, all protons are the same, yet it's the combination of them that creates all matter. Everything in the universe is made of the same material.
Just
and,
because
yeah.
of the
and all of us, by analogy, are the same.
Created of the same.
We are the same.
Amen.
We have the same
mm-hmm.
essence, but yet, just as water and iron look different, we have different amounts of sattva, rajas, and tamas that make us look different, appear different. But our essence is, we've just got those three things in us, according to this way of looking at things. Sattva, tamas, and rajas.
Protons, electrons.
It's a way of looking at things. So you've got a different number of electrons than me.
Mm-hmm.
And we have different amounts of tamas, rajas,
and it changes
sattva.
Throughout the day.
And it changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, just like elements with the same number of protons, neutrons, and electrons can change. You know, water turns to ice and so on.
By the temperature and time.
Anyway, it's just to break down our thinking, open us up a little bit. In the same way, if sattva, the sattva energy, is a bit predominant in someone, that person is said to be a spiritual seeker. The sattva energy is fine. Does it mean he doesn't have any electrons or protons? No, that person still has tamas and rajas. Someone with a little more rajas, a few more electrons, just runs around.
Busy bee, gotta get it done, checklist.
Yeah,
it
sounds like my brain.
Now, Satchidananda has his eye on what he sees as the essence of everything in person, not just us, but things is the same. The essence is the same. We're focused on the differences, the different numbers of these qualities. Can we focus on the essence, just like Mother Teresa does when she looks at a person and focuses on their essence, which she calls their Christ-like nature. That's all she sees. Can we change our consciousness so that instead of seeing the differences, we rather begin to focus on the same essence? We've heard we should do it, and it's a bit of a challenge.
You were talking about ice and water and all that sort of, Does the makeup of the protons, electrons, and neutrons stay the same? It just goes into a different state?
I think it's a different structure, someone could.
Yeah, the crystalline structure. Yeah, absolutely. You cannot change electrons, protons, or neutrons.
So it's just a different state that this combination is in?
Right. And again, all matter is in motion.
Yeah.
Almost at absolute zero. All matter is in motion. Our body, everything is in motion. This wall is in motion. Actually, the atoms of that are in motion.
Uh-huh.
So when you lower the temperature, we use water, lower the temperature, the molecules slow down and then form a crystalline structure. And that is what we call ice. And if we were to heat it up, water heated up, it speeds up the molecules and goes into the gaseous state.
Uh-huh.
So, but the electrons, the core constituents that make them up, remain the same.
Okay, so it's almost like the sophic state or Jossic state or the Tamasic state changes with the state. It's the state. And like we do the same thing, we're the same person, but our state can change.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
So here you are, the same essence, and one day you're a corpse.
Oh,
we're heading,
given day.
We're heading that way. And we're the same essence. Yeah, the same essence. So even though there's been a huge change in structure. A huge change in structure. It's a way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
The essence doesn't change. There's a principle in physics called the conservation of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Conservation of energy. E equals mc squared, Einstein brought it to us. So the amount of mass and energy never changes. Like mass goes to energy, you know.
Right.
But somehow there's some constancy there. Can we take that analogy and apply it to our consciousness of others and also of the world? That's the leap that he's suggesting here. All right, someone with a little more rajas runs around. After all, what are the body and mind? Nothing but the same prakriti. Just what we've said here.
Mm-hmm.
What's prakriti? It's just all the electron stuff, protons. Same prakriti, same essence. Prakriti. I like the way the word sounds, prakriti.
Yes,
it's a nice sound too. Oh my goodness. We're all done because it's almost 11. We didn't get very far today.
It also gives us different perspective for, rather than our disposition beliefs of what nature is to individual. So I like the Sanskrit words too.
Yeah.
Right, the Sanskrit words can help take us out of our habitual ways of looking
yes.
at things
yes.
because they're different. We have
new perspectives.
Yes.
So we're going to close now. There's lots more fun stuff to come.
This was fun.
Yeah.
We'll charge a little deeper next week. A little deeper next week. So if without willfulness, you can allow your body now to transition into three deep breaths. Just let your body experience three deep breaths. And with a deep in breath.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Excellent.